Well, in Acts chapter 24, we'll read the first two verses. And after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and a spokesman, one Tertullus, and laid before the governor their case against Paul. And when he had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying. Now the situation here is that Paul is in Caesarea on trial for his faith in Jesus Christ. He has appealed and he's come to Felix, the governor of Caesarea. The Jewish council, the Sanhedrin, have apprehended him, making false claims about his behavior. They bring him from Jerusalem to Felix, the Roman governor, who will hear his case. And Felix reads the letter and he received from the Roman governor, and he says that he will hear the case when his accusers arrive. So we've just got a court case here, waiting for the different people, the witnesses and so on, to come. And they've now all arrived. So that's where we're at the beginning of chapter 24. And we read then right away that after 5 days, everyone was present. The high priest, the elders, the lawyers, and this Tertullus man. This was the chief lawyer for the prosecution accusing Paul of three things that we'll notice in a moment. And he was called to speak and to present his case against Paul. And like many lawyers, and like many professional men today as well as in the past, when performing in a political arena, they very often resort to nauseating flattery. They want to gain the favour of men of high position. And this lawyer for the prosecution against Paul, he spoke lies about the judge, about Felix, pretending he was a great man and that they had great peace. Since through you, we read in verses 2 and 3, since you, Felix, we enjoy much peace, and since by your foresight, most excellent Felix, reforms are being made for this nation in every way and everywhere, we accept this with all gratitude. We're so pleased that you're in charge of things here because we're benefiting greatly. And that was a huge lie. That was a huge lie. They had tremendous troubles, tremendous unrest and riots. I mean, Paul needed 470 soldiers, we noticed last week, to guard him, to protect him. And so this man, with flattery, seeks to gain the favour already of the judge, Felix, by thanking him for the peace that they never really had, and so on. Now, history testifies that Felix himself was a man that was a corrupt man. He was a violent man. He wasn't a good man at all. His characteristics were of self-centeredness. Self-centeredness. Sought promotion for himself at whatever cost, if it was through lies or whatever. Now, it was one thing to be respectful to the judge. And when you go to court, you've got to be respectful. You have to give people their place. Honour to whom honour is due. And no doubt to this man there was a former, as we'll see, Paul himself gave a little bit of honour to him or gave him his place. But it's one thing to be respectful and to give honour. It's another thing to flatter people with untruths. And it's tempting to win the favour of politicians and judges. But if we believe in God, a God of justice, it will not do. It will be counterproductive. God is not impressed with any lies that we may say. I think we can understand this position about people flattering. The politicians just now on television in their interviews, and the public can read through flattery. We might think that we're encouraging someone, but the public know when we're not honest. We can see through with them. You hear it in all the politicians is now. Oh, he doesn't mean that. They'll change their mind when they get power. When they get an opportunity, they'll change all that. They're saying all this just now, but when the time comes, they'll change. They'll do a U-turn. So it's the same sort of thing here. We flatter people. That's not right. Well, anyway, let's get to the point. Tertullus claimed that there were three things that Paul did that was not right. He had three charges against Paul. Number one, he was a troublemaker. This man's a troublemaker. We have found this man a plague, that's what he said. One who stirs up riots among all the Jews throughout the world. He was saying that no matter where this fellow goes, he causes trouble. Just look at what happened in Philippi. Look what happened in Berea. Look what happened in all the different places. It was quite right, there was trouble. Paul didn't start it. Yes, there was trouble every time he went, because people didn't allow him say and speak the truth. Plenty of people can confirm the troubles that have resulted from this man's teaching is what they were saying, and indeed, trouble did follow him, but Paul didn't create it. Paul did not start it. And we Christians, as things are going the way they're going, we're going in the Western world and in the UK, we mustn't lose heart when people start saying, look, Christianity causes all the trouble. It's all the wars. All the wars are because of Christianity. I remember the first time don't do it now, of course, but I went to the Murraygate and started preaching on a Sunday afternoon. Didn't do it very often, but we did it. And I remember right away, the first thing a man came up, he says, religion's the cause of all the wars. I couldn't answer him, of course, but Christianity will be blamed for things that of which it's not guilty. And we can take, for instance, the Rangers and Celtic football matches. They're said to be sectarian violence. There's religious violence. That's nonsense. Yes, there might be violence there, but it's not religious. There may be in the name of religion. People may say it's in the name of religion. But the bitterness and the differences that are there between the parties that may cause trouble, it's not over religion. Oh my, my, not at all. The fans know very little about religion. The fans know very little about transubstantiation, which is one of the great issues between Protestantism and Roman Catholicism. They know very little about purgatory. Is it biblical or is it not biblical? They know very little about the apocryphal books. Should they be in the Bible or should they not? They know very little about extreme unction and the difference between mortal and venial sins, which was the arguments between Protestantism and Roman Catholicism. That's not what they're arguing about, and yet they're saying it's religious and sectarian. It's not. Christianity will be blamed for things. Always was the case, and it's the case now. We need to prepare for it. Right? Paul was falsely accused of being a troublemaker. He wasn't. Second charge that they made against Paul, he was a ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. A ringleader of the sect. Now, a sect is something that is distinct and different, that opposes, it's a heresy. The word here is heresy. The Romans accepted all religions, actually. Accepted the Jewish religion, it was the officially recognized among the plurality. The Jews were accepted. All religions that were official were accepted by Rome. But what Tertullus was saying was that Paul's religion, Christianity, was an entirely new religion and we're not accepting it. It was not recognized by the Roman authorities. It was a heretical religion. It ought to be banned. And the word used there for a sect is the word for heresy, for which we get a heresy. It's not a heresy. It's truth. Now, we live in a day and a culture, sadly now, and when all religions are seen is equal. And all lead to the one God. They're all the same, it doesn't matter. That's the culture we're in, that multicultural, multi-religious Britain. The public and our authorities really are now saying, look, all religions are the same, they lead to one God. That's not our official position by our constitution. Of course, we're Christian by our constitution, and that constitution still stands. And when Charles, if it ever happens that he is made the king, will see such a huge change from the last coronation, the vows that the sovereign will take. But in spite of this, Christianity then and as now is treated as less than equal, and it's singled out for bigotry. Today in many quarters, a belief in absolutes, a belief in an absolute God, that means in just one truth, one revelation, and it's right. And a belief in one way of righteousness in Jesus Christ, and that all the others are wrong, that is seen as so wrong, has been bigoted, has been intolerant, and has been arrogant. If you say there's only one religion, there's only one way to God, there's only one truth, the Bible, you're seen as a bigot. You're taken as a bigot, as Paul was here. You're intolerant of others. You think you're right. All the others are wrong. Friends, there's been a subtle shift in the academic world and in our dictionaries concerning the word tolerance and intolerance. The computer's Encarta dictionary shows it. You can look it up when you go home. But there's been this shift. A shift from accepting the existence of different views. There was when we believed there were different views. We accept that there are different views, the existence of different views. That's one thing. But now there's been this subtle shift to acceptance of different views, that we accept them all. Subtle difference. Subtle in form, big and massive in content, in meaning, in significance, in substance. We've moved from recognizing that other people have a right to have different beliefs and practices to accepting that different views are right. They're all right. We've moved from allowing the free expression of contrary opinions to be allowed to the accepting of all opinions. That's a very subtle shift, but it's big. And that's in Don Carson's book, The Intolerance of Tolerance. The Intolerance of Tolerance. People have changed the meaning of tolerance. Right, that's the second, a sect, ringleader of a sect. That's what Paul was charged with. The third charge that was made to him was they tried to profane the temple. He tried to profane the temple. He wasn't tried with being in the temple. He was in the temple. And he admitted that. But he didn't profane it. He tried to profane it, they said. This was one of the few charges, of course, and this is probably why he made this charge. It was one of the few charges which the Jews could still pronounce the death sentence. So that's why they said he tried to profane the temple. And we need to be prepared to realise that people will distort things and exaggerate and twist things that are not true. Paul did not profane the temple. He worshipped there. Falsely charged. You read the books there that we used to have there, not at the moment, but the books on the table there, from Barnabas Fund, full of Christians in other parts of the world who are falsely charged and accused. It's happening today. We still live in a world where there is a prejudice against Christianity, false charges made. And the courts accept it. The courts in Pakistan and in Sudan and in Somalia and different places where the Muslim and the atheistical authorities in China and in the former Soviet states, the authorities, the courts, built on their religion or built on their atheism, they're prejudiced against Christianity. And we need to be prepared for that. To misrepresent a person's motives and what he's done is very wrong. To put an edge and a spin on in order to influence people's views and opinion is a big sin. So Tertullus stated that all these charges could be easily proved just to ask these Jews who were behind it all. And of course, asking such people who had such hatred to him, they affirmed it all in verse 9, affirming that all these things were so. So that was the charge, that was the prosecution from the Roman court there. Let's look now at Paul's defence, how Paul defended himself. That's just exactly it. He defended himself. He didn't have a lawyer. He speaks for himself. And when the governor had nodded, as you can see in all the films in a court case, you nod every time you can say, you want a reply and whatever, he replied. And he too gives the courtesy, no flattery, but the courtesy, knowing that for many years you've been a judge over this nation. He didn't say a good judge, but we acknowledge that you have that position, a high position. I cheerfully make my defence. I don't have anyone to speak for me. He congratulated him on his long service. You've been there for many years. But he didn't use any flattery. Now he immediately refutes one by one the charges. Yes, he said, I was in Jerusalem and I was in the temple too. But I had a twofold mission. I went there on purpose. I went there on a mission. I was there to worship God. Their God. These Jews. I went there. I had my head shaven. I went there to worship God. And I had a vow. And I paid vows. And I paid the sum due at the end of it. I was there to worship God. I was there to bring alms and to present offerings, verse 17. And they didn't find me disputing with anyone or stirring up a crowd, verse 12. In fact, when they found me in the temple, they found me purified. I was in that section where they were purified, where there was silence. And there was silence. Without any crowd or tumult. Then Paul assures Felix. He says, neither can they prove to you what they now bring up against you. Tell them to have proof. He just made a statement. Now often just now, even in our policies that we're reading just now, so many people are just making statements, not giving evidence or proof of how they can bring about what they're saying they'll do. It's words, and it sounds great. That's what we want. But how are you going to get there? Where's the evidence and proof? And Paul is saying that here. Neither can they prove to what they now bring up against me. There are those who ought to be here before you if they are guilty, if I am guilty. Where are they? Where's Claudius Lysias? He was the man who was going to whip me. Until it became clear that I was a Roman citizen. They're not here. Your witnesses haven't come. Claudius Lysias never came. And see the part he played, as we've had in the last few weeks. Now, Paul had a one-track mind. Now, we use that in another context completely. But he had a one-track mind, and praise be to God for that. He could not just miss an opportunity to testify to the gospel of Jesus Christ. Here he brings in the gospel. In explaining and detailing his innocence, Paul zoned in on the essence of the gospel. Speaking of the temple and worship, he says, I confess to you that according to the way, which they call a sect, I worship the God of our fathers. Now, Paul says four things. He says four things about his faith. First of all, he says, I worship according to the Way. Now, the Way was a name that was given to the Christian movement. The Way. This is the right way. This is the good way. This is the holy way. The Way was the Christian way. What a wonderful thing that it was given that name. The Christian, the Way. This is the way we want to go, because the sinners have gone out of the way. But this is the way. And in the Bible we have the way of peace. And this indeed is the way of peace, true peace, peace with God, peace with men. This is the way to heaven. The Bible talks about the way to heaven, the way of peace, the way to heaven, and the way of righteousness. I worship God according to the way of righteousness. Now I worship God according to the way of the Lord. We read about the way of the Lord. We read about the way of truth. Paul worshipped God according to truth, the way of truth, the way of salvation. Paul, I worship God. I've got to worship God according to the way of salvation, the way of righteousness, the way of truth, the way of the Lord, the way to heaven, the way of peace. Originally, there was indeed in the Garden of Eden, there was the way of the tree of life. The way of the tree of life. But we sinned against God. And what do we now get? We get the way of Cain. We get the way of Balaam. We get the way of hell. Out of the way, to the wrong way, going the wrong road. Paul taught that he learned from Jesus that Christ was the way, the truth, and the life. Have you found out that Christ is the way? He is the truth. He is the life. So that's the first thing that Paul said. He worshipped God according to the way, this Christian way. Secondly, he said he believed everything in the Bible. He believed everything in the Bible. The way they formed it in that day, in that culture, in that age, was in the law and the prophets. That was the term given to the Holy Scriptures. That was the term. When you said the law and the prophets, you meant the Bible, the then Bible that the Jews had. Believing everything, not just some things, not just the things I liked. I believed everything laid down by the law and written in the prophets, verse 14. Jesus Christ himself said this, until heaven and earth pass away, not one iota, not one dot will pass from the law. Until everything's fulfilled, everything's accomplished that's written there. Everything's to be accomplished. Not a dot, not an iota, not a dot and I, or stroke of T as we say in our culture. Iota was the smallest written symbol in the Jewish alphabet. Jesus said that all this has taken place, that the scriptures of the prophets might be fulfilled. Paul believed everything the Bible had written. He didn't just pick and choose. He believed it all. I hope you do. I hope you believe everything that's written there. I hope you pray that you get right understanding, because we can get wrong understandings. That's why we need the Holy Spirit, and that's why we should pray every time we read the Bible. Help me see the truth. Help me see the important things, the big things. Give me clear vision and understanding. The third thing that Paul mentioned here was that he had a hope in God. Now we had this warning about a hope, a living hope. Verse 15, a hope in God. Saving faith is a faith that believes in propositions, in doctrines, in statements. There are statements that we must believe and accept. But with that faith, in these statements, in these propositions, as they call them, you also get a life. there is imparted a life that brings a living hope. Something alive within you that's looking forward to the future, to the perfect future where righteousness dwells, where there's perfection. This hope in God, this future hope that there's to be a wonderful time, a wonderful future where there is righteousness, nothing else but goodness and truth, and we will be involved in that. Peter said that that the Lord God caused us to be born again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. And the writer to Hebrews say that we desire each one of you to show the same earnestness, to have the full assurance of a hope. To show the same earnestness. Are you earnest about getting assurance of this hope? How earnest are you in making sure that you have this hope and that you're not missing the mark? Paul said here that I always take pains to have a clear conscience toward God and man. Verse 16. Do you take pains to have a clear conscience in connection with your faith toward God? Then finally, Paul said to them, and he was convicted there will be a resurrection of both the just and the unjust, that we will all rise again on the resurrection, just and unjust. We all will rise, and we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ, so that each one may receive what is due. What you do and what I do, what you say and what I say, is due something. There's to be a return for everything we say, for everything we do, and even for everything we think. There's something due us, blessing or curse, to some degree or other. We will rise in the judgment, so that each one of us may receive what is due for what he has done in the body. And Paul made it very plain in verse 21, the last verse that we have there, that he knew fine why he was really brought here. He wasn't brought here because he did something wrong. He wasn't brought there because he committed a crime. He was brought there with respect to the resurrection of the dead. I've touched your conscience. I've touched your heart. That's why I'm in trial before you this day. Because I said something you don't like. That we're all going to account, give account to God. Paul was clear in his conscience. Paul was clear in his conscience. And he was quite prepared to take whatever God wanted him to go through. But he stood up for Christ. And there's a lot more that we'll look at next week or whenever, Lord willing, about how Felix responded and what he said to Felix personally and what the whole outcome was, which is very interesting. But for the moment, we have here what Paul was accused of and how Paul substantiated and defended himself. Well, let's just read verses 1 and 2. And after 5 days, the high priest Ananias came down with some elders and spokesman, one Tertullus. They laid before the governor their case against Paul. And when he had been summoned, Tertullus began to accuse him, saying these things that he said. And then Paul defended himself and said what he said. So may God bless our time together. Let's have a few moments of silent prayer as we ask God to give us grace to be able to do what, not just to say what Paul said, but to do what Paul said, and to be able to have a clear conscience in saying it.